With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, so the Astros lose last night to the Dodgers. The Dodgers sweep the two-game set. If you're looking to circle dates on your calendar, the Astros will see the Dodgers again. They don't play all of these National League West teams twice. They play the Diamondbacks twice, and they play the Dodgers twice. If you want to circle a weekend, circle September 12th and 13th. That's a Saturday and a Sunday in Los Angeles. No Texans game that Sunday because they play Thursday night against the Kansas City Chiefs that weekend, so that'll be good. You can be solely focused on the Astros locally. Hopefully the Rockets are playing a playoff game. You'll get some NFL Week 1 action. It's all good. We're getting sports back. This is fun. But they lose last night in extra innings. And Seth, the big criticism for Dusty Baker today is that he had some strategic hiccups in extra innings. Now, this is the first extra inning game that Dusty has managed with the new rule that is being put in place for this season, where each team starts with a runner on second base. And so the scenarios that he's getting the criticism for: bottom of the 10th, Kyle Tucker is on second base, Jose Altuve is at the plate. I think a lot of people wanted Dusty to bunt there with Altuve to move Tucker over. Maybe even Altuve beats it out. He's still got some wheels. Instead, he lets Altuve swing away. He strikes out swinging, and then the need for a bunt goes away after that because you got Bregman and Brantley coming up. Bregman ended up walking. They actually intentionally walked Bregman, and then Brantley grounds into a double play. And then in the bottom of the 11th, the Astros are trailing 2-1 because the Dodgers put a run on the board in the top of that inning. So you're not going to be bunting and moving runners over necessarily there. You're trailing, although I guess maybe you could. Mayfield came in and ran for Brantley, who would have been starting the inning on second base. Gurriel singles, Mayfield goes to third, and then Correa singles, Mayfield scores, and Gurriel to second. So the game gets tied up, so there's no criticism there, right? I mean, it's hard to criticize him. They got three straight guys on base. They get the tying run. But now first and second, nobody out, and Abraham Toro is at the plate, and I think Dusty is getting some criticism today for not having Toro bunt to move Gurriel and Correa over to second and third with what would have been one out, and then Straw and Springer coming up. Instead, Straw grounds into a force play that might not should have been a force play. There was a replay review that the Astros probably got screwed on. Springer, who's a mess right now, strikes out to end the inning, and away we go. By the time the Astros are coming up in the bottom of the, well, the bottom of the 12th, I think he's getting some criticism too because it was still tied at two. Why not bunt there, have Kyle Tucker bunt and move Springer over? So three straight innings, there were opportunities where if you are a bunt enthusiast,
yeah,
Baker had an opportunity to put the go-ahead run at third base with one out.
I guess, and that's where, and you know, and multiple times this morning, people have, you know, texted in or tweeted in and said, hey, that's just basic. That's what you do in that situation. You bunt. Not necessarily anymore, I guess, and that's where it's so frustrating and infuriating sometimes, is that even though it's Toro and even though it's Miles Straw and even though it's a struggling George Springer, that the numbers would tell you that your best chances are it one of those guys getting a hit, perhaps an extra base hit, whatever, and that's your best chance of scoring a run there. I guess I only say that because it never feels right and doesn't feel good to play the odds or percentages. But I do say it as a way of saying that, look, it's not like Dusty Baker isn't aware that that's a situation where you could bunt.
Right.
It's that the math and the thinking has changed in those situations over the course of the last decade or two. And it was a... it's not a completely asinine, boneheaded decision that your high school baseball coach could have made. It's an informed decision when he's up there in that moment.
Here's Dusty on his decision making in extra innings.
Yeah, I thought about it, but if I bunt, then it's up to, it'd have been up to, to Straw, I think. I thought about it, but, with the hitters that we have here, I mean, who was up against Floro? Was it Altuve?
No, I'm talking about Toro after Correa tied the game in the 11th.
No, but he wasn't up there to, he wasn't up there. But if I was going to do anything, I might have left Dubs in to bunt. But, no, I didn't think about that. I mean, they didn't bunt. We didn't bunt. Nobody bunted. And so, I thought I liked the matchup, with Toro. Up there, and that's what he's here for.
This is the first time that the Astros have played a game with this rule in place. Seth, there have been about a half dozen games so far this year where this rule has been in play. It's been in place for this season to keep games shorter, and it's been successful most of the time. Last night, by far the longest game that's been played in baseball this season. No other games made it past the 11th inning because of this rule. I would be curious, that may be my research for today, is to go see exactly how other managers are handling this around baseball. We know how analytically driven baseball is now. I do wonder if around baseball, managers are being told from on high, look, here's what the numbers say. Let your guys swing. Because the sacrifice bunt is not an automatic thing either. There are such thing as unsuccessful sacrifices.
And it kind of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy in some respects, because as people bunt less, they get less good at bunting, Right. That's why you can have four people in the outfield sometimes now, because teams have realized, none of these guys know how to bunt, so we'll just go ahead and have a four-person outfield. And it's hard because it doesn't have anything to do with having a guy start off the inning on second base. It's that pure situation there. A lot of people just want to say it's a no-brainer that you bunt in that situation. It's not. It just isn't, and it's been like this. I just get tired of hearing about it every single time in all these situations where I have to hear, it's a no-brainer. You do it there. It's not. It hasn't been in baseball, in Major League Baseball, for some time now. That is not a automatic bunt situation.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially with Altuve up. Like, there were people saying, well, Altuve needs to bunt. Like, no, Altuve is one of the best hitters in baseball. I'm more confident in Altuve taking care of business by getting a base hit there than the sequence of events that then need to take place if Altuve lays down a bunt. So that was one big talking point coming off of that game. I think, big talking points here are the Astros' big guns right now are a mess. George Springer is a basket case at the plate. Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman are slumping right now. These are guys, Seth. In some ways, I feel good about the Astros because I look at it, I go, okay, well, what were we really worried about coming into the year? The bullpen. Oh, my God, they've got eight rookies in the bullpen. By and large, these rookies have overachieved. They've exceeded expectations. Javier was amazing last night pitching 5 2/3 innings. He was really good. Belak was good two nights ago. Taylor was really good last night. Cy Snead, the home run last night notwithstanding, has looked really good. The baseball's looked really good coming out of his hand. These young pitchers have been pretty nice so far. I mean, the bullpen disasters have been more the veteran guys like Davinsky and Biagini. Osuna got his groove back a little bit last night too. The thing that encourages me is that the stuff that we're counting on is not happening yet, and we count on it because we know it's going to happen. Bregman and Altuve and Springer are going to hit at some point, So I'm not panicked yet.
They're like, if you look at the league stats, because I was thinking about this morning when I was on my constitutional, just taking my little walk. As far as we're kind of isolated and we're focused in on our own teams, and I haven't really looked at the league at large to try to figure out what's going on. And as I'm listening to Brantley and everybody else talk about getting the bats back and getting it together, I wondered, okay, how what is it like around the rest of the league? And I was surprised to see that right now the Astros are actually tied for fifth in runs scored. There has not been an outpouring of offense around the league, and I think as people try to kind of feel their way through this start after a 3-week training camp, maybe the bats around the league are a little bit dry. the Astros are middle of the pack when it comes to OPS, batting average, a lot of your conventional stats. The thing that's really crushing them right now, and this will not be a surprise to anybody, is runners in scoring position. They're down in the bottom three for runners in scoring position, but they're fifth in runs scored. Like, at some point, it's going to flip. You know, now, the Astros have gone long, long stretches in various seasons of having
glad you're
trouble
pointing
with runners
this out.
In scoring
yes,
position.
Thank you.
And this is only a 60-game season.
Yeah.
So there, that's the one little codicil I'll add to that, that it's not an automatic, but I think at some point, yes, it will flip because of Altuve, because Springer, who I got to think it's his knee from when he hit the wall the other day as much as him being in a slump. I think he might be physically ailing a little bit. And probably, I would imagine Springer banged a wall in, was that game one or two? That was game.
It was the first game of the year.
Yeah, game one. And it's a 60-game season. He probably wanted to fight through it, maybe more so than he might in a normal year. So they realize, okay, we just got to give him a break there. I think it's going to be just fine. They just got to turn it up one little notch.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It was either the first or second game of the year, Seth, because I remember typing in my notes over the weekend, like, someone needs to tell George Springer to look at the scoreboard before he goes flying into the outfield. Well, they were up by like 5 runs at the time. Like, I'm okay with Springer letting the ball bounce off the wall if they're up 7-2 against the Mariners. And to that point, I think we'll find out a lot about the Astros this weekend. And the reason I say that is the Mariners are a horrible baseball team. They're really bad. And the Astros, I know they scored 7-plus runs a game in that series. They didn't hit the ball all that well. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like I watched any of those games. I'm like, boy, this is a dominant offensive performance. They scored in bunches. They needed some help from the Mariners in a couple of those games to make just some asinine plays in the field. And so while they scored over 7 runs a game, it didn't feel like a dominant Astros type of weekend because that's a really bad opponent. Conversely, yeah. The opponent they've been playing the last 2 days is a heavyweight. They're one of the two best teams in baseball. And look, the Astros, by and large, stood toe-to-toe with them. They had one bad inning 2 nights ago. And then last night, you know, a ball bounces differently here or there in extra innings, and we're talking about the Astros winning the game. The bottom line is the Dodgers are a team where you got to bring your A game to win on a consistent basis against them. This will be a good clarifying weekend this weekend. The Angels are a team with some pretty good players. They're a divisional opponent. There should be some good sauce on this thing this weekend. You got McCullers and Greinke that are part of the rotation. So this is what your team is going to look like when the postseason rolls around. And this is a team that's right in the middle. You know what I mean? It's not the Mariners who are terrible. It's not the Dodgers who are a super heavyweight. This is a team that you should go out to L.A. and take care of your business against and win the series at least. You know, maybe not going to sweep them, but this is a series that even a banged up, Verlander-less Astros team should go into L.A. and take this series this weekend.
It's, man, as much as we cautioned ourselves before this shortened season began that, look, it's a short season. It's going to be – it's like any baseball season where you might get off to a slow start or a fast start. You can't read too much into it. Here I am. We're 10% of the way done with this season.
Yeah.
And I'm reading the hell and everything about that, Sean. 10%.
10%.
You're 10% of the way down. You've played 6 games out of 60.
Yeah.
Wait, let me check my math. Yes, 10%.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. And 3-3 feels like they might as well be 0-6. Yeah. I'm way more stressed out than I thought I would be at this point.
It's wild.
And they've played good competitive baseball. Yeah. You know, they were 0-1. In a normal year, you say, oh, you're 0-2 versus the Dodgers. Well, first of all, you're going to have another game the next day in a normal year. But nope, that's all you get. Two games versus the Dodgers, and now you're 3-3. It feels a lot more intense.
No, the season is living up to the hype when it comes to the stress level. No doubt about it. Speaking of which, the NBA restarts tonight. Rockets restart tomorrow. NBA doubleheader tonight on TNT. What kind of questions is the league going to get, though, based on what was a pretty explosive ESPN article about their relationship with China yesterday? We'll have that for you next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday, and it's a Thursday. It is. We wouldn't normally be saying this at a Thursday in late July. This is where, Seth, baseball in late July, okay, feels normal. You know, staying up late to watch an Astros game last night.
Yeah.
Feels normal. I will say, as a morning host, I do like the 6:10 p.m. first pitch time.
That was a nice surprise. I thought I was bracing for another late start. Yeah. I didn't realize they had an early one. That was nice.
I got to go to bed at my normal time, even with a 13-inning baseball game. So that was pretty good. But Thursday night doubleheaders with the NBA. Now, that on the surface feels normal until you attach the date July 30th to it. So we are going to be watching regular season basketball tonight on TNT, a doubleheader. It's New Orleans, and I believe, who's New Orleans got? Is it Utah? I know Zion's playing in the first game, and then the second game is the two L.A. teams. But Seth, the NBA starting back up tonight. How excited are you that you're getting the NBA back in your life?
This feels, in a weird way, nothing about it feels normal, and yet it's helped me feel. I feel like it's actually helped my mental health a lot. Having sports return over these last few weeks, and it's not just because my job revolves around talking about it. It's made my job a little bit harder in some respects because we weren't having a hard time finding stuff to talk about. Now it's a lot easier because you know exactly what you're going to talk about. You don't have to find anything to talk about. The sports happen and then you talk about it. The problem is now we have to stay up late again. I was getting to bed early. Yeah. I was like getting my 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night.
Right.
I'm losing weight.
Right.
I'm going to be a mess again within 2 months.
No,
I'm going to be smoking cigarettes. And
our topics were clock agnostic. They are clock dependent.
Sean and I would have a little text exchange at 4:30 p.m. the previous day.
Yeah.
And the show would be ready to go.
In the can. Yeah, in the can. Now we've got to react to things. Yeah.
But I was thinking about that this morning. There was, like, with all this stuff with COVID, I think there's times, I think most people always have the feeling for the most part of like, don't be a wimp about stuff. It's not a big deal, whatever. I'm just going to forge ahead. It's a bigger deal, I think, than maybe I've accepted. Is in terms of just how much changing your daily routine, not being able to socialize the way you used to, not being able to go out and do things that you might have done to relax previously. Everything is upended, so you just got this low grade stress all the time. I feel like with the return of sports, some of that low grade stress has been removed because this is what I used to do for fun. I forgot. I used to watch the Astros play baseball. I used to watch the Rockets play basketball. This is what I do for fun, and I haven't done any of it in months.
I forgot how much I appreciated the feeling of looking forward to a game throughout the day. You know what I mean? Like the feeling in the afternoon, like, it's 6:10 p.m. tonight is first pitcher. Tonight, for example, tip-off. You know, I can't wait. 5:30. The game starts at 5:30 tonight, by the way. The first one, Utah, New Orleans, and then the second game, the two L.A. teams. It's not like it's being played in L.A., Seth, where it would start at 9:30 at night so all the L.A. people can get to the stadium. It's being played in the bubble in Orlando. So we get that bad boy at 8 o'clock tonight.
Sean, how nice is it to have the distraction of being worried about George Springer?
Yeah.
And like I say you know how it is in our household. We worry for George Springer.
Correct.
You know, Brandy lives in, like, Brandy feels like she's George Springer's aunt.
Right.
She's so attached to him. And, like, so when George is suffering, Brandy suffers. And yet, I savor and I relish the fact that I'm worried about a baseball player right now.
Feels normal.
It's a nice feeling to have.
It just
takes your mind off of all of your other actual and real concerns in the world.
It'll be nicer when George is hitting again. But, yes, your point is a valid one. Now, Seth, tonight, NBA gets started back up, should be a big celebration of basketball, and yet if Adam Silver is in that bubble, and I don't know if he's going to be or not, he might want to avoid it today. Big article on ESPN yesterday, and I give ESPN a lot of credit here. I mean, they are a deep, deep partner with the NBA, with, you know, all the broadcasting that goes on, and they blew the lid off of some stuff that's going on in the NBA's academies over in China. The NBA The NBA had academies in China where they were bringing in, you know, Chinese teenagers to ostensibly to train them for basketball and educate them as if it were a school as well. And as it turns out, a lot of the NBA employees who are from the United States who went over there to work on behalf of the NBA were just appalled at some of the I guess we'll call them working conditions for the players, in that they were physically abused by some of the Chinese coaches. They basically couldn't believe the coaching style of some of the Chinese coaches with the kids there, like physical abuse, mental abuse, eight or 10 kids to a dorm room kind of stuff. Just some really, really poor conditions for these kids where you feel awful for them. And yet you feel like, wow, I mean, this is the criticism of the NBA on the heels of the Daryl Morey tweet last year is, look, all the social justice in the world over here, but you're in bed with this country that has prison camps and things like
that. Well, and, you know, and part of this is there's a big cultural divide, obviously. And some of the people they interviewed would say that in Chinese culture, at least where these academies were, it's much, much more common still to have corporal punishment from the, you know, it's more common for coaches to hit players, but clearly and obviously in the NBA, that's not going to be allowed. There wasn't oversight over this. Like it kept going on. And then I think the other big thing is that there was no education going on. These kids weren't being, they were supposed to be like at the MLS has these soccer academies, you know, that Houston has one, and the kids go and they practice soccer in the morning, then they go to school and then they practice soccer again. It's really cool. I've been out there at the Dynamo facility and I've watched these kids, and frankly, I was jealous because I thought I didn't realize what was going on. I was out there visiting Garrett Heinrich, our old digital guy, who's now a bigwig with the Dynamo.
Right.
And I was like, man, these kids are having a blast. They're going out and practicing. They actually, before COVID came along, they get to practice. Some of the kids get to practice with the actual professional players at times. It's a hell of an opportunity. But they're also getting their high school diplomas while they do it.
Yeah.
This basically tried to do the same thing, except we're going to hit the kids and we're not going to let them go to school.
Right.
It's just going to be, all we're going to do is make them practice three times a day. We're going to hit them and they're not going to go to school in the NBA in China.
Here's some of the descriptions in the article. One American coach called it a sweat camp for athletes. NBA officials, this is a somewhat damning thing, I think, is that NBA officials, when they found out this article was coming out with ESPN, NBA officials asked current and former employees not to speak to ESPN for the story and then doubled down by telling them, quote, don't mention that you've been advised not to respond either. Of course, immediately these former employees are like, here you go. This is the, see, look, they're.
The NBA, which basically, like Woj might as well work for the NBA.
Right.
They think that somehow they're going to be able to keep something from leaking. Well, that league thrives on leaks.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought up Woj because people probably may remember, I think sometimes we overestimate just how much our average fan knows who Adrian Wojnarowski is, the newsbreaker in the NBA. Like, if you're on Twitter, you obviously know who he is. If you're an NBA fan, you do. He's the Adam Schefter of the NBA, basically. He was suspended for 2 weeks. You may not have noticed because there was no basketball going on. But he was suspended for 2 weeks because he sent an expletive back to a politician who was trying to get clarity on, hey, what do you think of the NBA's relationship with China amidst all the social justice initiatives the league is trying to implement here in the United States? Woj sent back a simple FU, but he said, you know, he typed the word, and that senator tweeted out a screen cap of it. His employer, ESPN, suspends him for 2 weeks. They mentioned that in this article. You know, ESPN.com mentioned the Woj email in the article. It's presumably a coworker of these authors. So they went pretty deep on this thing.
It's tough. You know, I don't like getting holier than thou when we talk about China, because the fact of the matter is we do business with China. We do business with a lot of countries around the world, and we do business with a lot of countries where stuff goes, like there are human rights violations. There are things that are not savory. But we use goods that are cheaper because they were manufactured in China. So I guess it all comes down to, all right, well, how much should you be? How much, even in doing business with China, how much should you allow China to dictate terms to you? And I think with the NBA, where people get understandably upset about the hypocrisy, is that it extends far enough that, okay, wait a second, Daryl Morey's not allowed to tweet about human rights violations in China. It's one thing to do business with China, but you're going to let China, you're going to basically let China and the government, because the government controls the Chinese basketball league, you're going to let them dictate how your employees are allowed to talk. That's where people start to get a little bit up in arms, and I think rightfully so.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially when social justice is woven into the fabric of your league, probably more than any of the other leagues. You know what I mean? With the NBA. So
yeah, that it's okay. Now, when people point that out, I guess there's part of it where I think that you can point it out, and I think you can have serious objections to it with the NBA. But there are also times where there are people that don't give a damn what's going on in China who are trying to grandstand and say, look, the NBA is evil because I care about China, but they don't. Like, no, you don't. You're just trying to point something out.
Darren Revelle, Action Network, will join us. We'll get his thoughts on baseball. What are the odds? There are actually odds out now. Will baseball make it to a postseason? Will football make it to a postseason? He's with the Action Network, so that's a gambling network. So we'll get his thoughts on some of that and the restart of the NBA tonight. Darren Revelle's next. We are excited, as always, to 9:35 on a Thursday, speak to our weekly guest in this spot, Action Network. You can definitely download the free Action Network app. Games are back. The NBA is back tonight. MLB back in full force. Darren Revelle of the Action Network joining us on the show. Darren, I'm looking at your Twitter timeline. Seth said he's heard you tell this story before, but I don't know that I've heard it, but it's relevant because we're in Houston. How did Jeff Bagwell wind up at your bar mitzvah?
So a year before, one of my friends had Mickey Mantle at his bar mitzvah. It was really like, it was his dad's party. Like, it was his bar mitzvah, but it was his dad's party, really. Like, it was for his dad. It was really annoying. Like, who knew something, you know? But Mickey Mantle was a big deal. So I said to my dad, I need a baseball player at my bar mitzvah. My dad is like, we're going to spend some money on the party, but you know what? I don't think we're going to be able to afford who you want. And at the time, I had been a minor league guy. I had a lot of pride in like telling people who I thought was going to be big next. So there were a bunch of players. I gave my dad three players. I gave my dad Jeff Bagwell, who had hit, I think, 30 home runs with the New Britain Red Sox the year before. Was just traded for Larry Anderson to the Astros from the Red Sox. I gave him Alan Zinter and Brooke Fordyce, which are two catchers related to the Mets because I was a Mets fan. Well, what happened was Bagwell, made the team in 91 and he was doing really well. And in May, my dad called the Astros and said, listen, the Astros are playing the Mets. We have a bar mitzvah in Long Island. It's a night game. You think we could get Jeff Bagwell to the bar mitzvah, 1 o'clock party, sign a couple autographs, and then get him back to Shea Stadium? And my dad met Jeff the night before, gave him his $400 check. He signed about 50 bats, 300 autographs, and other things. So I'm not sure Jeff is fond of it, but so the funny thing is when we didn't really stay in touch, but, when Roger Clemens was playing his last game in Houston, I went to the clubhouse cause I was doing something on Clemens. And I said to Bagwell, I'm like, hey, you went to my bar mitzvah, so this and that. He's like, well, I only went to one. That was in Long Island.
You know what, Darren? I think that I'm sorry. Were you finished, or was it?
That's pretty much yeah. Well, and then when he got into the Hall of Fame, he signed one of those yellow postcards with the plaque from your bar mitzvah to Cooperstown, which is pretty cool.
That's cool.
Actually, there's one part of the story that I didn't tell, which is really quick, but. Every one of my bar mitzvah is like, how is Daryl Strawberry or Doc Gooden not here? like those are, and they're crumpling up their Bagwell autograph. And, little do they know he's the one who made the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, of those three, he was the one who made the Hall of Fame. That's wild. Yeah. That's wild.
It's a nice part of my legacy when they say, yeah, Darren Revelle is a kid. He was meant to do what he did,
Darren, yeah. As you're telling me this story, I feel like this is right up your alley. I have an idea for you in terms of a list you can compile.
Oh, no.
Now that you're with the Action Network, I don't know if it's right up your alley anymore. I feel like back when you were writing exclusively about the business of sports, I think. But honestly, right. I've always been impressed by there's a sweet spot when it comes to hiring an athlete to come to an event. By far the most bang for your buck you'll get, depending on what it is when you have a guy who was a late round draft pick or a rookie free agent, who has had some success in his rookie year or his second year. Because those guys, they'll come out and they'll do appearances for not that much money. But
here's the other thing. Some of it is too for their ego. Like LeBron doesn't need to show up at a bar mitzvah for ego,
Right.
It is kind of like a wow, someone wanted me, and it was maybe that was maybe Jeff's first. I mean, that could have been his first autograph signing. I'll post the picture later, but so yesterday he was doing a signing for TriStar as the exclusive with him, and I showed them, I still, obviously, because I'm a hoarder, I have the stack of pictures he signed in my house from 91, and the Astros publicity photo looks like a mugshot. It looks like he has a black eye. And it's amazing. It's amazing.
How was he in terms of like his personality and interaction and everything when he was at the party?
Very quiet.
Yeah.
He was very, versus a Strawberry or a Gooden or a Gary Carter. I mean, he was signing autographs. He was very quiet. I think it's a tough position to put a 23-year-old into. But I remember that he was shy.
Yeah, it's a weird thing when you're in your early 20s. You're not even really a full grown man yet, and you're put in this position where you feel like there's expectations of you, and you don't exactly. It's very uncomfortable. You're being put on display in a bunch of, and then the kids themselves. You're trying to talk to the kids, but they're nervous to be talking to a ball player. But the idea I had for you, and this would actually be good for you to come up with the TriStar guys. Like the curating of guys like that. Like I was at an autograph signing once with DJ Swearinger when he was just coming off of a promising rookie year. You know, and DJ's like a flashy guy. Like there's a lot of intrigue with him. And it was just, I wasn't there signing autographs. I just happened to be there at this event. And there were like 200 people lined up to get a DJ Swearinger autograph. And I would imagine
because it was $49.
Yeah. And it wasn't a TriStar thing, but those were people that were just flat out excited to see this young Texan player. I'm trying to get some of these younger Texans players hired right now by various businesses by telling them via radio, go out and get your Zach Cunninghams of the world and whatnot. Guys that haven't gotten their first big contract yet. There's value there.
By the way, I think I was at the most expensive rookie signing ever. I think it was in Houston during the Super Bowl. Would Zeke Elliott? When was the Super Bowl in Houston?
Yeah, that was Zeke Elliott's rookie year. It was in the Super Bowl. It was the 2016 season, 2017 Super Bowl.
So the Galleria Mall had Zeke Elliott, and it was $350 a cig.
Ooh,
And Guy Fieri was online.
Was online?
Yeah.
Is he a big Cowboy fan?
Yeah.
No, he's a Raiders fan, but I guess he was a Zeke. Yeah. I don't know, but yeah, they had some sort of conversation about
350.
$350.
That's where I remember that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Because at first I thought you were gonna say LeBron James, because LeBron James had a big party the first time Houston had a Super Bowl back in 2003. Was that his rookie year? That was his rookie year.
2003 was his rookie year. I remember the line in New York City when the LeBron ones came out at midnight. That was before Apple lines. So the only thing equivalent that I've ever seen to that was like a Black Friday line. But before that, there were not lines for even Jordans in 2003 in the way that it became. So, like, I remember being in New York City and the line for the LeBrons was, 500 deep.
Yeah, crazy.
It's amazing. It's amazing he lived up to the most hyped athlete ever, and he lived up to it. I mean, I don't think he gets enough credit for that.
And continues to this day. I mean, he plays tonight, and everybody's all psyched about it. So we get basketball back tonight, Darren. And
I feel like Darren's taking a shot at Freddie Adu,
right there. The soccer player.
Yeah.
I was the first one to call him a bust. That was my.
That's
right. Were you? Oh, really?
Oh, wow. I remember that.
I thought you somehow knew that.
No. That's oh my god! You have such a talent for angering people. Like you go into a whole sector. Like people in the soccer world don't earn.
I called him a bust very, very, very early.
Was he like 16?
A lot of people got mad at me. This is before Twitter, but I have the Twitter evidence. And I remember I showed up to when he signed with like an MLS team or something at the end, and there were not some kind words exchanged. But yeah, no, I was first on the Freddie Adu bus train.
Where is he now?
He's still trying to make it in MLS, at least as of last year.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
I got to text you the, my first Freddie Adu's a bust, article.
Please do. Please. I remember well, this that. Is a,
Darren, was he like 19 years old? I guess that's the thing with.
No, he was 16. Because the buzz started at 14.
Yeah.
So by 16, I had already made my decision.
He's just a kid. He's just a kid.
He's just a kid.
I'll bet. So Darren, we're starting to get these sports trickling back into our lives here. Of course, baseball had some issues over the weekend. I'm curious. I want to bounce this off you from a wagering perspective. I'm looking at odds. I'm not sure what outlet it is. I get them in my email from a bunch of them throughout the week, but I thought these would be interesting ones to bounce off of you, given what's going on with the Marlins and
my bookie.
Was it my bookie? Okay, gotcha.
No. I'm just saying. Not mybookie.com.
Oh,
your odds are from your bookie.
Mine are from my space bookie. Lowercase M, lowercase B. Yes, absolutely. Right. Will there be a World Series in 2020? Yes, is a very healthy favorite right now at -300. What are your thoughts on that, given everything that's gone on this week with the Marlins and around baseball?
I actually think there will be, but they got really lucky. Because if the Phillies, first of all, the idea that they had a 113-page handbook and that there was nothing to account for, like, what happens if 10 players got corona? Like, that was not in 113 pages. I called up baseball and I'm like, I'm just making sure. And they're like, we'll let you know if it was in there. I'm like, okay, it wasn't. Thanks. But then the fact that it relies on the Phillies to not play the Marlins the next day, it's crazy how this thing kind of, I think we've gotten saved by it, but it was like, I think by the, you know, we got saved here. I think we'll get through the season now.
Interesting. Yeah, it's. I think Darren. I thought that I'm with you. The protocols when they came out, I go, well, they're pretty loose here. You know, not very clear on some things. Do you think that sometimes the lack of clarity in there is so that they can have as much latitude as possible to keep the season alive? Like, man, we need this revenue to come in. If we start getting specific with things, then we're being held to some sort of standard, as opposed to if they're not specific about it, then they can just kind of do what they're doing, which is
I don't think the players could get together before a game and be like, all right, let's play.
Yeah. Right.
You know, I mean, I just don't think, I agree with you that sometimes that's an excuse. And sometimes that's not even an excuse. It's something that's helpful, especially if a leaked document is going to be leaked. But I don't think in any scenario the players should be deciding basically the fate of the league.
Yeah.
Right, and I wonder, based on what you've seen from baseball and basketball in varying levels of preparedness, Major League Soccer, European soccer. How do you feel? Like, what's your gut feel on how the NFL is doing it so far? Do they have their ducks in a row, or are you anticipating sloppiness?
No.
Okay.
I don't. I all I've seen from the NFL is arrogance. I haven't seen anything that. And I'm still really wondering about those face shields. I mean, they're trying out these corona shields that you know. Someone's actually going to die from because they won't be able to breathe.
Well, that's I wonder because and Sean, note to ourselves, next time we have Maldonado, the catcher for the Astros, on a Zoom call, he started off in the first game wearing a plexiglass shield over his catcher's mask, and he'd gotten rid of it by the second game. And he was wearing a mask also, you know, like he was trying to take a lot of precautions because obviously umpires and catchers are at the most risk of exposure. And I don't know. I mean, that's a catcher in an air conditioned environment. I don't know what's going to happen to football players trying to play outdoors in September.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like it's going to work. And just, There's always a lag in testing and when someone has it, and like you can't get around that. And so I do wonder if they're going to regret, you know, not having a bubble scenario. And you know, you look at what happened to Lou Williams, and it's like okay, the NFL players can basically go where they want to go out in game week. I mean, obviously, like, don't do this and you'll be penalized, and we've talked about this, but like, going out of the bubble is a lot different than being back in your community.
Yeah, Darren,
You know what we need to do, Sean?
What's that?
We need to establish an antibody club where, like, NFL players can go or Major League Baseball players can go, and any of the patrons there have tested positive for the antibodies.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah.
The antibody club, including women.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They can go and just have consort and meet people and do whatever they want to do with people.
Yeah.
Just like they would any normal bar or something. It's just that everybody's tested out and they're safe for athletic competition.
So
and then if you want to come into the antibody club, but you don't have the antibodies, we'll sell you the convalescent plasma, and then later you could come back.
Yeah, this is like a very sanitary version of Clockwork Orange.
Same exact thing.
Yeah,
exactly.
Darren Revelle, Action Network. Download the free Action Network app. We're getting NBA back tonight. We've had baseball back for a week. Football will be here soon enough, we hope. And Darren, we always appreciate the time, man, and appreciate the stories. Thank you.
Despite what people might say, I'm happy that sports are back because I've talked about COVID-19 and some negative things. I'm not actually rooting for sports to not come back. Okay.
Yeah. No. We've been watching the Twitter fires burn.
Yes. Darren, I'm exhausted.
I can only imagine, Darren. We always appreciate the time. We'll talk to you
soon.
Take care. All right. You too. See you, Darren Revelle, joining us on the show.
Dude, he wrote an article calling Freddie Adu a bust when he's 16. That's
Darren Revelle is in. He is an Olympic level bleepster, man.
He really is, man. It's funny sometimes you see the reactions he elicits from people. You know, sometimes for almost nothing at all, it's just their people are so triggered and they expect to be triggered by him that he's just got an amazing ability to tweak people.
It's uncanny. Awesome. Landry Locker jumps in here with us for a minute to let us know what's going on In the Loop. How are you feeling this morning, man? That was a late night for you.
No, I'm feeling great. I'm feeling amazing. Dusty Baker, man, honeymoon might be over. I'm not quite ready to sell the stock, but the warnings that you got about Dusty Baker have been on display the last couple nights, and in the spirit of fairness, I pride myself on being fair. He's getting the BOB treatment today.
He's
getting the BOB treatment today.
That's early, six games in.
He's getting it. You know,
who's reporting it?
Well, I'm reporting that. When you start,
is on Bill O'Brien or Bombs Over Baghdad?
I'm talking.
Which one?
I'm talking Bill O'Brien. And the reasoning is when you start saying stuff and then doing different stuff when the moment comes, that's when you're not okay with me.
Okay.
And Dusty Baker right now, I'll forgive him in the next 12 hours, but in the next four especially,
yeah,
he's getting the BOB treatment.
BOB treatment from In the Loop, Landry Locker and John Lopez. All right, there we go. Seth, antibodies to you to the extent that maybe we can hang out at your antibodies club. Oh, by the way, I don't have the antibodies.
Got
my results back yesterday. I am negative for the antibodies.
Antibodies and T cells to you, and analytics over bunting forever.
Yeah. I take it to heart when he says antibodies to you because I learned yesterday that I need them. I don't have them. All right, there it is. We are done. We're about out of time. Big thanks to Ben Gary for producing us. Figgy Fig, Landry Locker, John Lopez. They are in the loop. They are up next. We will see you tomorrow, bright and early, 6 a.m. Be there. Have a good day, everybody.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.